Hey everybody, Adam here for a bonus episode of TFG Radio. Today I have a special guest, Neil Kerr from the WTC, the head judge, correct? Or head referee?
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit weird. We don't have head referees, we just have referees. But I am kind of like the, because just like at the LVO, you guys got rid of the sort of the head judge thing to stop people like trying to ask for a higher opinion.
Yeah,
but I think that I'm always, I've been the main referee for 6 years. I think everyone kind of like calls me the head referee, even though it's not an official title.
Yeah, they do the same thing to John, even though he's hasn't been there as long as a few other people, and sometimes he's not there the whole weekend. So,
yeah.
But the reason I have you on is because recently the WTC put out their rules and terrain pack for next year's event, correct?
Yeah, that's right. We're already, fingers crossed, we'll be able to run next year.
Yeah, and so I just wanted to discuss with you about the event because I know a lot of people in the U.S. especially are not familiar with team events in general and WTC in particular. So first off, though, I want you to go over more or less how you got into the game tabletop gaming in general and GW 40K.
Yeah. Well, I got into gaming, Christ, when I was about 10 years old. This is like, you know, late 80s, late 90s, when HeroQuest and Space Crusade got released. And then subsequently Battlemasters, which was kind of like a Warhammer Fantasy game played on a big mat, big vinyl mat in your bedroom.
I still have mine.
And I got that for Christmas, you know, built them all. My dad bought me some sort of random Humbrol enamel paints and all that, you know, the classic way to get into it. Mm-hmm. And then he discovered there was actually Games Workshop. Actually, there was a shop in the town I was living in that sold extra models for this game, and that was Games Workshop. And so I sort of went in, got wowed by it all, and got hooked from there. So I actually started playing back in first edition.
Okay.
Shows how old I am.
Well,
and I think I went to my first tournament when I was 14, 15. Went into my first tournament. Did pretty well. Came third, which was nice. It was like a kind of regional event. All the games workshops in the region had a in-store tournament, and then the top three players from each store went to a final at the biggest store in the area. And that just got me really, really hooked into competitive gaming as well.
Okay, cool. And then what armies do you play, or you currently play, or have played?
I have played everything, but I'm one of these kind of like hobby butterflies. I jump between armies way too often, and as my painting has progressed over the years, or as, you know, the quality of models progress, I keep selling stuff and then redoing it. Like, I think I'm on maybe my 7th or 8th Space Marine army, for example.
Oh, right.
You know, when new stuff comes, like Primaris came out, like, ooh, shiny, right, I have to have a certain army of Primaris Marines. Well, I'll just sell all the old stuff. You know, maybe slightly questionable now they're all getting, you know, buffs and extra wounds and stuff, but that's just the way I am.
Is there any army you particularly, I know you play everything, but is there any one that you particularly enjoy?
I mean, I always come back to Space Marines. Okay. I have always sort of played Space Marines, always came back to them eventually. What I've been playing of late, so I'm really enjoying. I've just picked up a Custodes as an army, which is one of the few armies I hadn't actually played before. So enjoying the challenge of learning 9th and learning a completely new army that's all very elite and very challenging. So it's good fun.
Okay. Now, I brought you on, like I said, to talk about WTC. Can you just give me and give the listeners a brief history, both what it was before and what it is now?
Yeah, so the WTC used to be called the ETC, the European Team Championships. Now it's called the World Team Championships. And it all started back in, I'm going to probably get this wrong, but I think it was either 2006 or 2007, where in Poland, a bunch of Polish Warhammer players were fed up always playing the same guys at tournaments. And so they basically put a post out on a forum inviting people from other countries to come play in a team event. They created a format. There's no team events back then. And they created a format, and a bunch of teams came over, had a load of fun, and then they expanded it next year. They got more Warhammer teams, and the Polish 40K community wanted to join in, so they introduced 40K. And that's basically how it kicked off. You know, the first 40K ETC, there was, I didn't go. I know some people that went. I missed out on going because I didn't have the money at the time. But it was Team England went, and they managed to come 11th out of 10 teams because they spent the whole weekend drinking far too hard and actually got less points than the team who went home after day one. So it's sort of like nowhere near as serious. It was much more like a, you know, students going to a foreign country drinking beers and having fun. But it's evolved and grown in popularity from sort of, I'd say, like, you know, 10 teams, 40k back in 2007, to if we'd have had the WTC this year in Austria, we'd have been 40, if not 40, well, more than 40 teams, you know, before, and we're talking teams from, you know, North America, South America, Asia. We had, like, you know, Japan. There was a Japanese team going to be sent. We have an Australian team, New Zealand team, teams from Argentina. You know, it's now very much a world, like a global event, which is part and parcel of why we sort of changed the name when we broke away from the old ETC organization.
Mm-hmm. So how is one able to get a team together?
So the way it works is, so the ETC's always had this idea of it's nation versus nation. That was sort of the grounding principle. That's always just kept it very unique. So each country is allowed to send one team. And they decide, countries decided by, are you recognised by FIFA or not? Because Europeans love football. Europeans love football, or yes, you call it soccer. Yeah. You know, I don't. I like rugby. But so that's, you have an oddity, like America has one team, but the UK have four teams because England, Wales, Scotland, and Northern Ireland are all recognised individually by FIFA. So a team is sent to you, create a team in your community, and you send it, basically. And the only requirement of us is that you can prove the nationality of at least four of your members are, you know, nationals to that country. So... No, like, you know, people claiming they're sort of Team Mongolia or anything like that, unless they can prove they're Mongolians. Now, sorry. I'll say, how you get selected, though, varies from country to country. But a lot, there's sort of very much divide in the ETC, the WTC. There are small countries who struggle to get eight players together from their country because of maybe the community is very small, the cost of going to the event is very high, these inhibitions, you know, like the Argentinians, they struggle to get, they basically just get eight guys who are Argentinian. They're not, there's no sort of system to pick them, just to see, do you have the money? Can you go?
Right.
Whereas some of the bigger nations, a lot of the bigger nations have sort of established qualification systems, be it based on individual rankings, be it based on a series of team events and qualifying tournaments that helps select the team. And they're also the teams that generally do very well, like Germany, Poland, France, the Scandinavian nations, and, you know, the UK nations. They all have these very strongly established qualifying systems.
Okay. And then I noticed, in especially because I looked through the packet a little bit, that there's also a United Nations team.
Yeah.
And what's the purpose of that team?
So that's the ringer. But yeah, basically, if we, you know, you don't want team, because, you know, a lot of people spend their entire year working towards this event. You know, every tournament they'll go to over the year will be either qualifying to get into the team or it'll be practice for the event. You know, these players will rock up to their singles tournaments with their WTC list, even if that list is not very good to play in a singles event. They'll still want to practice. Mm-hmm. You know, you're paying all that money for, like, practice weekends, travel, everything. So, we don't want a team to show up, and because there's an odd number of teams, they have to basically sit out for a round. That's crap. You know, you pay all this money, you put all this time and effort, and you want to play your full complement of games. So the UN team is, if there's an instance of a team, we have an odd number of teams registered, or, as happened last year, a team had to drop out last minute. We can pull together sort of like people, just random people who maybe are going to the event already as hangers-on, or people who are interested in coming along to play, and just sort of create an all-comers list just to fill that gap.
Okay. And you mentioned the ETC beforehand. And we discussed a little off-air, but... So, and I guess some people question, or some people have heard what happened last year. Can you give more information, if you can, of what caused the break off from the ETC to the WTC?
Well, do you want the real reason or the fake news reason?
The real reason. We don't deal with this.
Okay. The fake news was that one of our guys is going to make lots of money and live on a private island and that's crazy sold. But the real reason is that the ETC has always had a kind of one issue. And that's that every year it changes location. It's kind of like the Olympics, mm-hmm. in that countries bid, or they put proposals for to become the hosts for a year. And then the team, all the teams will vote on, you know, which host sounds the best. What invariably happened was teams voted for a place they hadn't been to before and a place they'd like to go on holiday to. And you would show up, so you would be basically year by year, you'd be showing up to a location in Europe and quite frankly, hoping that the organizers deliver everything they promise. And I, you know, and a lot of times they didn't. We've had times where, you know, we were told lunch was including the ticket price. You get to the event, you get to the country, you get to the event, and the organizers turn around and say, no, you're paying for lunch. Deal with it. You've had times where you showed up to an event and it's like unpainted boards and barely any terrain, all sorts of problems. Because it's like you're kind of like, you know, best intentions. You're handing over the keys to the kingdom to people that sometimes you don't really know. Because sometimes it was people outside of the ETC community that were, you know, offering to host these events. And there's a lot of money involved, obviously. You know, we're talking 400-500 people, you know, 70 odd euros per person to enter. It's a lot of money very quickly. Yeah. And then the food, beverages, all this thing. So there was always, and people used to joke about this, and kind of like this kind of morbid joke, that you would hope that when you showed up to this country, there would actually be an event. Because in all likelihood, someone could just take all the money and run. Never happened, thankfully, but it was always at risk. And the problem was that because it's like changing the organizers every single year, changing the location every single year, there was no continuity, there was no opportunity to build infrastructure, to build on previous years in terms of the quality of the events. And so it meant that every year you kind of were starting from scratch. And so every year it was just kind of like, it was a bit shoddy. It's an easy way to put it. You know, the quality of terrain was low, quality boards often low, issues of venues. I just want to say the general kind of like experience you got for, or value for money you got was very low. You compare it to like the big events in America, LGT, once they got their terrain sorted out. And these things, you know, you're paying a lot of money and you weren't really getting quality back. You weren't getting value for your money back. That said, what kept people going for so many years is that the event is like the greatest social gathering ever. You know, I've been going every year since 2009 because I get to go see all my friends from all over the world every single year.
Yeah.
And if you ask anyone who's been to the ETC, the WTC, that's what they say. They go because the people are there. You know, and that's kept us going for so long because it's like, we're so passionate about playing 40k and about playing this like great community of people from all over the world and seeing all these people, all these friends. You know, I've been to America, I've been to loads of places now just based off meeting people at this event and then going to visit them. I've been invited over to play and stuff. But there comes a point where it's not enough, and it's been building up for years and years and years. This idea like, you know, we could do better. Why are we not doing better? And it all came to a head last year when the ETC was going to go to Luxembourg, and the organizers turned around and they basically ignored everything that us as a system, 40k, all the things we wanted that we kind of needed to make our game work, they ignored it. For example, we have actually as a system invested in terrain. Some of the people in the, like the actual captains of club money together to invest in terrain that's functional for 40k. The organizers in Luxembourg were like, oh, we're like, no, we're not going to use that terrain. We're going to 3D print resin terrain for the entire event and then sell it to the players. It's like, how much money is that going to cost? How much is that going to cost to the players when you don't sell it? You know, it's like, they basically tell you, we know better than you. And people have just been sick of hearing this. You know, been years and years of hearing this attitude of the organizers know better than the people actually playing in the event. And sort of push came to shove. And there was basically all the captains went, nah, we're sick of this. Let's have a vote. Because the other thing at the ETC is, not only unique in terms of it's all these players from all over the world, it's a democracy in that decisions are made by the players. There aren't, I mean, I'm a TO now. I sort of guide the ship. But in terms of like the missions, the rules, packs, the format, that's decided by the players playing. It's, they're invested in making those decisions. So all the 40k captains, all the teams basically said, let's have a vote to stay or not stay. And it was like 95% of them voted to leave.
Okay.
There were only, I think it was like two teams out of like 36 eligible to vote, voted not to leave. And they voted only not to leave this year.
Oh.
They voted to leave, but to leave a year later. So, and it was just like, it was this case of like, people were sick of it and people knew that we could do better. Mm-hmm. You know, letting go of the ETC, which was like, you know, it was AOS, it was Ninth Age, it was Flamethrower, it's this big, unwieldy game of tournament of lots and lots of systems that wasn't really working anymore. And let's just focus on 40K for ourselves and get the 40K right. So that's where we're at.
So for WTC, is it still the same in that you're still letting countries bid to host?
So we are, but what's happened is now is that instead of a host becoming the tournament organizer, we are the tournament organizers is myself, Tom Adriani, mm-hmm. and Ishik. Yeah, me and Tom have been going to ETC since 2009. Ishik's been going since 2013 or 14. We're all sort of big tournament organizers in our home countries. We've all been in, we're well respected in the ETC community. Tom writes the rules, basically. I do all the refereeing, and Ishik sort of sorts all the training, all like the back end logistics. Okay. And we've been doing that for a long while. So it sort of was a natural thing that we would become the TOs. So what will happen now is when we find we asked for bids, but the bids were you will give us a venue.
Okay.
We are going to control all the money as an organization. We're going to control all the decisions. Basically, we're looking for people in a country who can find a venue that is suitable to our needs within the price range that we require. And then we will bring everything to the event.
So are they contacting the venue, or are you contacting the venue?
So they come off to our men on the ground.
Okay. Oh, okay.
And then another prerequisites are any bids have to be done by people that are part of this community. So we're not having any outsiders involved anymore. Okay. You know, if you want to make a bid, we need to know who you are. So like we had like the Spanish, the Greeks, the Austrians, the Slovenian teams, they all put bids in, and then we sort of went through the bids, worked out which ones worked, which ones did so obviously, you know, checking the facts, checking the money, checking the stuff we've been given to make sure it's actually legit. And then we presented these bids to the captains, and the captains voted. Okay. And they voted for Austria, and they voted for Austria, and so that's basically the Austrian WTC team will provide the venue and the sort of the on-the-ground, you know, support for us to run the event. And then we will show up with the terrain and everything to run the attached to do the event itself. They're providing the venue and things like, you know, tables, chairs, making sure there's accommodation available for players, these kind of things.
Okay. So and like you mentioned earlier, the captains basically decide just about everything.
Yeah, it's good and it's bad. You know, it's the problem with democracy, isn't
yes.
it? You know, sometimes you just want to be able to say, no, this is how it should be.
Right.
But because we do it this way, people are much more invested in the end result. At least that's what we find, you know, that's what the teams tell us as well. Even when they don't like a decision, they know the decision's been made by the collective, so they're happier.
Is there anything you guys do decide on your own without a vote?
So there are things. So like for example, when we went through the bids, we basically, you know, pruned out bits of this isn't realistic. Like, you know, we proved that the bids that we thought weren't going to work. You know, there are, so like, we always communicate our decisions back to the captains and they can sort of turn and say, actually, we don't need to do that. But, you know, stuff that's sort of like, you know, this is just a simple decision, like, you know, what should we, you know, which caging company should we use, or which provider of terrain or match do we use? That's just a basic financial, you know, that's just a case of accountability. This is the bids we got. We chose the best one. This is why. So we sort of do all that. But when it comes to, say, how the format of the event, the rules are played, which missions are played, how the boards look in terms of the terrain and such like, well, we give guidance and we put our ideas. So did the teams, and collectively the teams decide which ones they want to go for and what they want to do. So, for example, this year we've said, because historically the ETC has never allowed Forge World.
Yes, that's at least, yeah. Everybody knows that at least.
Yeah, which is funny. It's funny. The one thing they do know is Team America can only have 8 guys, and Sean Aiden picks those guys, and there's no Forge World. That's basically what everybody knows about the ETC in America. But the reasons for that is because we have a lot of reasons why it's not been allowed is one, balance issues in the past. Mm-hmm. It's getting much better. And also because a lot of our players, a lot of our teams come from, we'll say, Eastern European countries or countries that don't have access to a Games Workshop or even a hobby store. The cost of Forge World is really inhibitive to them. And therefore, there's always been resistance to forge because you don't want to create a situation of pay to win.
Okay, yeah, I understand.
It's also why we allow third party models at the ETC, the WTC. Okay. Like the Polar, it's companies like what some of us want, the Polar companies like Cromlech and that's a few third party model companies.
There's one called Artel W that does character models.
Exactly, and we allow those because again, you know, when you've got guys coming from countries where the average wage is less than $100 a week. Mm-hmm. And you're charging, you know, 100 euros if they played in the singles and the team event entry to an event. You know, there's some realism given there. So that was why Forge War historically wasn't allowed. But what we said is that me, Tom and Ishik, in our rules pack, we sort of created a rules pack because the captains wanted one quickly to start practicing with them, start playing with. So we gave them some rules and we said, let's allow Forge World, or at least let's try it. And then we'll decide in December if it stays or not. And that's the kind of decision making we make. We'll kind of put things there and say, try this. And in 3 months time or 6 months time, we'll decide if that thing worked or not.
Yeah. Cause I'm not sure, especially with the new edition, how broken or how good some units are in Forge World currently.
Yeah. I mean, there's some obvious issues with certain units, you know.
Yeah.
Chinooks are particularly underpriced. Tempests. The Leviathan is still the Leviathan. But we said to people, let's just give it a chance. Give it to December, and then we can decide. Because the problem is that, at least in Europe, obviously in America, ITC is the format. Or until 9th edition came along, ITC was the format. Almost every single tournament played ITC. In Europe, whilst ITC was increasing, ITC tournaments were increasing, ETC, WTC was the de facto format.
Yeah.
So what we say, what our mission rules pack is what a lot of people play at team, at singles events, which is a bit odd because the WTC missions and rules are designed for team play. They're not balanced for single play. So because we'd never allowed, Forge was never allowed before, in some countries, no one plays Forge whatsoever.
Yeah,
because no tournament allows it, because the BTC didn't allow it. So you wanted to try to by saying let's put it in the pack for now, that hopefully encourages people to try it out, rather than just sort of like, you know, we said no last year, we'll keep saying no attitude.
Yeah, and it shows at least some growth within the community into trying things out at the very least.
Yeah, I'm a custodies player, so I want my telemons.
Yeah, well, because even if you, let's say you ban it, in the following year, you can at least say, well, we tried it, and this is what happened, so we're going back to not allowing it, which is...
Yeah, yeah. And it may even be that we don't allow it come August. You know, like, this is the thing, like, we put the rules pack out, as you've seen, but that's just that's version one. That may well change. And in all likelihood, it will, over the next, sort of, like, 6 to 9 months. Those rules will probably evolve based on all the feedback we get from all the captains and, you know, what they work out works and doesn't work. Like, does Forge work, doesn't work? Do the mission, do the straight out of the book, do the missions work? Or do we need, you know, for our purposes or something else? Like, all this stuff. Like, we've put in, for example, in our terrain pack, we've put in that woods will be obscuring.
Right.
Because the feedback, in early feedback we got off playtesters, off your people who got, you know, these people got hold of the rules early was that it's like shooting armies, if you're not careful, just get to blow the table away. And we wanted that we didn't want to just have ruins all the time, so we wanted to incorporate, you know, different terrain like forests. But if you put forests on the table, the tower army just basically, because in a team event you get to pick the table you play on, potentially, a team will just get their shooty tower army and basically get him to be able to pick his table every game, and he'll pick the table of the forests, and because he can see through forests, he's shivering off the board. So we kind of like, an idea was to say, well, let's make forests obscuring so the forest is dense terrain instead of a ruin, but it still blocks line of sight stuff behind it, so it's not an easy pick for shooty armies.
Yeah.
But again, this is because it's a team event and things are very different because potentially players are picking their opponents and picking the table they're playing on, which is a situation you don't get in a singles event.
Yeah, since you brought up the terrain, I'm curious, did you help design the terrain? Because the way the terrain is designed, that did you as a committee decide what the terrain? Because the terrain's designed so that it works no matter what format you use.
Yeah, so that is Ishik. Ishik is, that is one of the things he's very good at. He, like I said, he's very good at sort of this back-end stuff. So he designed the boards with guidance from Tom, a little bit from myself. I was busy becoming a dad at the time, so I was a bit preoccupied with a baby. But Tom and a few other people sort of gave input early on. You know, these are people that have had access to the rules a bit earlier. Not Ishik, but Tom and a few other people. A few, like, you know, playtesters and stuff who were involved in WTC. So, like, you know, minor pointers, like, think about this, think about that. And so he put together the terrain. And again, that's a proposal. Like, feedback we've already had is, for example, one of the tables, I think it's table 6, just doesn't work. Everyone's just said it doesn't really work. Change it. And so we will. You know, that's the beauty of this. We put these things out, and we've got a year to get it right. And we've got a year for players to give us feedback and get it right as well. So the terrain that you see there, that's kind of like, you know, what we think will work. And already a month down the line, we're realizing certain things aren't working. So they'll be updated. And again, the aim is to have everything finalized December. So that still gives teams a good run up to the event, practice with a finalized terrain, finalized missions, etc.
When is the event for next year?
August. It's always in August.
Oh, it's always, because it's always in August.
It's always at the first or second week in August, because that's okay. The European summer holidays.
Oh, okay.
So, and because a lot of games are teachers, it makes sense.
switching from that, you mentioned that you're one of the referees at the event. How did you get started in that?
So I used to play. I actually was one of the guys that founded Team Scotland, and I was a Scottish captain for a couple of years. But progressively, I love playing, but there was always an issue at the ETC. This is something that Brad Chester talks about all the time. It's that cheating used to be endemic. Oh. This sort of win at all costs attitude turned into blatant cheating. Be it slow play, be it rules cheating, be what it is. And it was endemic at the ETC. It was terrible for it. A lot of it comes down to, I think, the kind of the pressure that you're not just playing for yourself, you're playing for a group of people, you're playing for a team. And then the pressure of, you know, if you're coming from a big community that's invested in this event, you're almost representing those people as well. Yeah. And it brought out, you know, we all know that when people get onto the top tables of a tournament, sometimes it brings out the worst in them. Sometimes their behaviour gets affected by the pressure. And I think the ETC can sometimes magnify that even more. So there was all sorts of issues with, like, deliberate slow playing and all sorts of stuff. Okay. You know, I once played a guy who took an hour and a half to deploy his army. I shit you not. Because he knew he couldn't win the game. He had this was like back in, I don't know, fifth or sixth ed, and he had a Imperial Guard army full of like Lehman Russes and whatnot. And I had an army of just Terminators, and so none of his battle cannons would go through my arm. I'd have a 2-up save against everything. And he just knew he couldn't win, so he just basically took an hour and a half to deploy. And the frustrating thing was, this happened year after year, and we had referees, and the referees did nothing. The referees were just, they had either no power or, we'll say, or didn't have the balls to sort of do something about it. And so I got really fed up, and then it all came to a head one year with a guy who was blatantly cheating his dice. People talked about this. Previous opponents had talked about this. I played and I saw what he was doing. I called the referees over, and the referees just said, "Can you please stop doing that?" And I was just like, I'm just like, stood there, like, I'm trying not to flip the table at this point. And so I just, at the end of the event, I went on this big rant on the captain's forums about this. And this happens every year, like all the captains complained every year. Oh, I think we're sick of this, we're sick of that, we're sick of this. But nothing changed. So I went, you know what? Fuck it. If you'll make me the head ref, I will change it. Because my background at the time was I used to be a teacher. Unfortunately I burnt out through stress, like unfortunately many teachers do. I'm also a lifelong rugby player. I know a rugby referee and a coach. You know, I know how to manage. I know how to stand between a team of two teams of 15 men in a full contact sport like American football. I can stand in the middle of them and tell them and basically get them all to basically stop misbehaving. You know, I'll be like, stop right now, and everyone stops. Yeah. You know, I have that pondus. And I was like, you make me referee, you give me carte blanche, I will sort this. And I did. It was painful, there was a lot of tears, a lot of upset people, but the event has improved drastically in terms of the attitudes of the people who go to play it. And now it is not an event that someone is for cheating. It's an event where cheating is very rare and it is brought and it is, you know, looked down upon hard by the community and it's punished hard by us referees as well. And I think everyone's happier for it. You know, back then, it used to be certain teams had these bad reputations and you'd hear people going, oh my God, we're playing them. Oh, they're a bunch of cheats. You know, that was the thing. And some teams would have a badge of honour. All those teams would turn themselves around because they all want to still be part of the gang and still get invited out for beers at the end of the weekend. You know? And they have done that. I mean, I'll say this, like, for example, Russia used to be a horrible reputation. And I'll say this because they got a new captain in, a young lad, and he was like, no, I'm none of this bullshit. We're going to play clean. We're going to win clean because we're good enough to win clean. And he's turned that team around. And then now the best, one of the best teams at the event, but also one of the most loved teams at the event. Everyone loves playing them. Even if you get your face get pushed in by them, you love playing them because they're such a bunch of great bunch of guys.
Yeah, for me, I used to be referee soccer. So that's from my background. But before the WTC or ETC, you didn't have any referee experience or judging experience?
None, in terms of 40K, none whatsoever. I became a full-time teacher a year before I became a referee. I've always been a TO. Mm-hmm. I used to run a lot of big events in the UK before I moved to Sweden. Still run events here in Sweden. So I've always had to have that refereeing role, that arbitration role. I used to, a very, very long time ago, be involved with the GW FAQs back in, I think, 4th edition, 5th edition.
Right.
A long time ago. So kind of that idea of like how to look, sit down, look at rules and, you know, work out the best way, the way this rule should work, the best way to interpret a rule. That's something I've done for a long time. And just how I very sort of have this attitude of just like no nonsense, you know, show me respect, I'll show you respect, act like a dick and I will send you flying. Yeah. That's quite simple. I've made some very big men feel very, very humble and very, very small at times because they've just been acting like children as far as I'm concerned.
Other than 40K, is it just 40K that's under the WTC or does it include other game systems?
Just 40K. So one big decision we made was the ETC used to have lots of gaming systems, which became one of the problems. It came so unwieldy to cater for the whims and the requirements of all these events, of all these systems, which meant that nothing got really catered for. Mm-hmm. So when we broke away, we had a long discussion about, you know, are we going to bring other events with us? Are we going to maybe include other events again in the future? And we went, well, no, because if we do that, there's a risk we end up back where we were.
Right.
So the World Team Championships, the WTC, will be 40K focused entirely.
Okay.
The one thing we have discussed as a possibility further down in the future is obviously right now it's currently a nation versus nation event, one team per country. And I don't think that'll ever change because there's a lot of, maybe obviously in America, you guys are not very aware of the WTC, but in Europe, there's a huge amount of prestige attached to being part of your national team.
Yes.
You know, you work very hard to get to that team. You spend a long time qualifying to get into that team. Like Sweden, for example, they have a ranking system. That just so you get a shout, and you have to be really high on the Swedish ranking system, which holds you to lots of tournaments. Then there are requirements of going to training weekends. You have to be playing at least one tournament outside of Sweden every year to prove you can prove in playing in an international environment. And these are big requirements. In France, they have a team, they qualify as a team. Oh. I think it's five guys. I think they play as a team of five. And they have like a tournament circuit that runs the entire year. Team tournaments to work out who's the best team of five, and then they pick three other guys.
Oh, okay.
Join the team. Yeah. This, the German, the Spanish do the same thing, the German. All these teams have like really rigid qualification systems that the entire competitive community funnels into. So there's a huge amount of prestige. So I don't think they, and they very much do not want to dilute that prestige by having multiple teams from a nation. But obviously it'd be nice to get more people involved.
Right.
So one idea we've banded around maybe in the future is to have a, you know, quote unquote side event. So you'd have sort of WTC nation versus nation, and at the same time you'd have an open team tournament. That anyone could enter.
Yeah.
And then maybe we could do something like the winner of that open team tournament, if we need a UN team the year after, they can become the UN team. And then also it could be a good way for players who are trying to get into their WC team to go to that event, sure they can do well, and that might be a way for them to get into their team as well. This could work really well for the communities involved.
Yeah. Would you plan on doing like a singles event, if you just keeping it 40k?
We do have a singles event.
Oh, you do have.
So I didn't even say that. Yeah, so the WTC is free. So
I think the team portion of the name.
It's a 3-day team tournament.
Okay.
Which we're currently deciding if we're going to have 8 games or 6 games over 3 games, over 3 days. It would either be 3 games Friday, 3 games Saturday, 2 games Sunday. But then a lot of teams are asking just do 2 games a day because they want to have more time to go out drinking afterwards and socialise and sightseeing. But then the Wednesday, Thursday is a singles event as well.
Okay.
And it's probably the most hardcore singles event going. Because you've got to consider WTC, there are obviously strong teams and weak teams in WTC, but essentially if you're on a team, you are probably one of the better players in your country.
Right.
If not the best player in your country. So you're playing against top players in the lower representative countries, which means there aren't any seals to go clubbing. And so the singles event is insanely hardcore.
I can imagine.
Like the quality of players, you know. I mean, like this year, you know, we had like the best, like Manny Chima versus the best player in Russia.
Oh, right.
Nick Navati versus the Serbian captain who's like the best player in the Balkans. Yeah, it's like, and these games are like down to the wire kind of games. It's amazing. It's really hardcore. It's just like another level.
Do you normally stream those games?
Or so
stream in general.
Stream in general. So the past couple of years has been streaming. Glasshammer have streamed. They've come down. They've actually driven across Europe to wherever the event is with all their equipment to do it, and they've streamed. But what we've said going forwards at the WTC, you know, one of the things we want to do is get a much better media presence. You know, mm-hmm. Get obviously people around the world more interested in the event, understanding it, and then also allowing people to get involved even if they can't be at the event. So we've actually went out and found a media partner, and we partnered with the T-Sports Network, aka Rob Symes from The Honest Wargamer, who I believe ran the streaming for the Stats Center at LVO this year.
Yeah, he helped with that, yes. No, yeah. I think it was Capital City Bloodbath.
Yeah, I know he was at the LVO as well this year. He only did like all the technical stuff in the background.
Oh, okay.
But Rob has, in the past 18 months, streamed major events from Canada to Australia.
Yes.
You know, he travels the world, and his passion is streaming Warhammer. And so we basically partnered up with him because he's a great guy, he's incredibly passionate about this, and he's incredibly passionate about WTC as well. And so we partnered up with him, and he's our media partner. And so what will happen at the event is he's going to deliver a full stream of 8 tables. So, because WTC is teams of 8.
Mm-hmm.
So like the ATC did it last year where they streamed every table on the top row. He will do that for the WTC. So previously Glasshammer were able to stream 1 table. Rob will stream all 8 tables. He will have, you know, table bosses in each table feeding into the commentators what's going on and stuff like that. He'll have his, you know, quote, his patented, you know, roving reporters that he's known for. He was the guy that started having like guys going around to all the other tables, checking out all the big event, like big matches that aren't being streamed, reporting back regularly. He's going to be doing all that at the event. And even leading up to the event, he's going to be producing like lots of media content. He wants to do like interviews and videos with all the teams involved, talking about, you know, those teams and not like, you know, the stories, where they've come from, what it's done to get the WTC. So he really wants to make this like a big sort of media extravaganza, which is awesome. So yeah.
That sounds good. Where can people go to find out more about the WTC?
So the easiest place would be Facebook and just, you know, look for WTC, World Team Championships, World Team Championship, or just go to worldteamchampionship.com. No S at the end.
Okay.
The funny one is, if you write Team World Team Championships, you get taken to what's become the ETC. What the ETC has become. They've kind of had a bit of a hissy fit and tried to steal our name. It's quite funny, really.
But, well, it's funny you say that, because we're having issues locally with some of our game stores doing something like that. So it's funny that you mentioned that.
it's just... I don't know what's worse, teacher politics, rugby politics, or wargaming politics. They're all just as bad as each other. But yeah, so the Facebook page or there, or you can, we've got a podcast, which we've started putting out on YouTube and all the podcast channels, which is called WTC Squadcast. I think we've got 2 episodes out. I'm actually editing an episode this weekend to put up on Monday.
Okay.
Which will be Nick Navati, obviously you know Nick, Matt Robertson from Team England, who won it this year, and then Steve Box. So I had a bit of a chat about ETC and stuff like that.
Well, sounds good. I'll be sure to put the links in the show notes.
I'll send them to you as well, so if you want.
So everybody be sure to go to those. I think we'll call it here, so everybody be sure to check out those links and check out WTC. I know for a lot of us it's something new, and a lot of people aren't familiar with team tournaments. Neil, is there anything else you'd like to add before we sign off?
Yeah, I would say if you've not been to a team event before and there's one in your area, get to one, because it is the best way to experience competitive 40K. There's nothing like it. It's on a whole different level to going to a singles event, because you're playing with your mates for your mates. It's just something else. And if you don't have one in your area, organize one. Get in touch with me if you want, and I'll help you out.
Yeah, I think I ran two or three of them for a few years at a local store before it closed down. But yeah, they're a lot of fun. It's a lot of different. And what's funny is you mentioned the stress level, but I didn't feel as stressed for me personally, because I knew that what happened to me, I just do the best I can, and even if I don't do well, it'll still contribute somewhat to the overall team score.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, that's the crazy thing. You can go into a game knowing you're going to lose, but you still score enough points that your score is actually the most important score for your team.
Yeah. So, again, everybody check out the links that I'll put in the show notes. Again, thank you, Neil, for taking the time out of your busy day to have a talk with
me. Yeah. Thanks for having me on, Adam.
Yeah. And hopefully you can come by to LVO. Or SoCal Open, or one of the bigger events, and we can talk in person.
Yeah, I'd love to. The little baby might stop me, but it's been a dream. I know that the Team America guys keep talking about trying to get like somebody to fund me to come over to an event and just be their refereeing or something. So we'll see.
I'm sure if you wanted to, if you don't mind not playing, if you wanted to, Reese would love having.
Honestly, I play because I go to tournaments to play more because it's an excuse to hang out with my friends.
That's kind of where I'm at.
So, like, if I go, like LVO, I said this to Rita, so LVO is so big, I kind of wouldn't want to play because I wouldn't have time to socialize enough. Because I've been told that you basically run around like an idiot playing all weekend and don't socialize, which doesn't really appeal to me as much as just going there and socializing. So if I could ever get over, I would just come over and just, you know, hang around you and John like a bad smell.
That's fine too. We've had people do that too, that they just come out and just hang out. But hopefully you can come out, you and your family soon. But again, thank you everybody for listening. Good night and have a pleasant tomorrow.